into that at 11 o'clock. I hope you will join us for that. Until then, I give you Bob Kincaid. I know he's got a terrific story about a bear named Bahamut. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. In a joint statement read by President Bush, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas agreed to start discussions on the key subjects of the Mideast conflict. Today's peace summit in Annapolis, Maryland is the first peace talk between the two parties in 7 years. In the past 48 hours, Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 7 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Israelis say the men all belong to Hamas. In Hebron, in the West Bank, a protest against the Annapolis peace talks prompted clashes between those loyal to Palestinian President Abbas and Islamists who call him a traitor. One demonstrator was shot and killed during the skirmishes. Stocks bounced back today on news that Citigroup got a cash infusion of $7 billion from the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. The Dow was up over 200 points today. We'll have the numbers coming up in our business segment. This holiday season may be bleak for many Americans who will lose their homes to foreclosure. An estimated 1.4 million U.S. families will be forced into foreclosure. According to the consultant firm Global Insight, escalating failed mortgage payments will knock approximately $676 billion from home values. Rising home foreclosures and gas prices drove consumer confidence down to the lowest level since Hurricane Katrina in 2005. The Consumer Confidence Index fell to 87.3. Economists had predicted the number for November would be 90.2. In Pakistan, President General Pervez Musharraf said farewell to troops today. He is expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. Thursday, Musharraf will be sworn in for a new term as Pakistani president. The U.S. military says it has killed 6 unarmed Iraqi civilians in the past 48 hours. Included were 2 women and a child. Troops opened fire on vehicles that did not appear to slow down when waved over by authorities. 4 civilians were wounded in those shootings. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a group of Baghdad policemen today, killing 9. The wife of millionaire adventurer Steve Fawcett is asking an Illinois court to declare her husband legally dead. Fawcett disappeared while flying over Nevada in September. The search for his aircraft was suspended last month. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40. Because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
The inventor of Gatorade has passed away. Robert Cade's death was announced by officials at the University of Florida, where Cade invented the drink for the Florida Gators football team in 1965. He was 80 years old. The president of the American Red Cross was let go today after it was determined he engaged in a personal relationship with a subordinate employee. Mark Everson was appointed to the position last May. The Food and Drug Administration is reviewing the flu drug Tamiflu. The drug is under scrutiny following reports of odd behavior in patients, especially children. FDA staffers recommend stronger label warnings. Netherlands lighting company Royal Philips Electronics announced it will acquire Louisville, Kentucky fixture manufacturer Genlight. Royal Philips will pay $2.7 billion. And gold is currently trading down $12.50 at $814 an ounce. Light sweet crude oil is trading down $3.28 at $94.42 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended up 215 points at 12,958. The NASDAQ was up 40 points, and the S&P 500 was up 21 points. We have more news on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here it is. It's Tuesday. And, you know, sometimes stories just won't let me go. Last night, it was the story of the pathetic woman in Saudi Arabia that those barbaric animals are going to beat the hide off of. And, you know, it keeps on and it gets worse, and lo and behold, there's another one for us today. Only this one comes out of Sudan. From the, the American school there. Dear God, here we go again. There is a woman by the name of Jillian Gibbons, and she is a teacher. She is from Great Britain, and she has been sentenced to being whipped in that bastion of civilization, the Sudan. Why? Because she allowed her class of elementary schoolers, 7-year-olds, otherwise known as second graders, she did, and I've seen these things happen with our own kids, not the whippings, but a notebook and a thing will come home, and the child is to write his or her reflections about the thing. You know, it's a writing exercise, for the love of God. And so she got a teddy bear, and the children each had a night to take the teddy bear home there in the Sudan. And they wrote in their little diary about the teddy bear, and at the end of it all, she asked the children what they wanted to name the bear. Oh, boy, should have known better. And they said, "We want to name the teddy bear Muhammad." So they named the teddy bear Muhammad. And now Jillian Gibbons, 54 years old, stands to have the hide whipped off of her by some barbaric monsters in Sudan, because her school children, and she allowed it, heresy, heresy, kill the heretic! Our magic God cannot stand for teddy bears to be named Muhammad. She's going to have the hide whipped off of her. because of a teddy bear named Muhammad. Now, the head of Unity High School in Khartoum, Sudan, has said it was a totally innocent mistake. But you see, there's still a there's still a little bit of a problem there, because it's not a mistake. Muhammad was not the first Muhammad to be named Muhammad. There are no proprietary rights to it. There are Muhammads all over the Muslim world. I guess it's because it's a teddy bear. I didn't realize that there were any Quranic injunctions against teddy bears, but it would appear that there are. It was a mistake. Well, okay, not really, no. The mistake is in the poor, sick, sad, twisted minds of these Sudanese freaks. As I said, classmates took turns taking the little teddy bear home with them, accompanied by a diary with the bear's name written in the front of it, and one of the parents freaked out and went, "Oh my! Oh, 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 Allah, they have named the bear Muhammad! Heresy! Oh!" I hate these stories. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown has said he was very sorry about Gibbon's arrest, and that the British Embassy in Khartoum was giving all appropriate consular assistance to her, and that efforts were being taken to ensure her early release, and that government officials are in touch with her family back in Liverpool. She is jailed on a charge of blasphemy. And apparently there's no ban in the Quran on images of Allah or the Prophet Muhammad. Likenesses are considered highly offensive by Muslims. Quit calling them Muslims. Stop with the bad journalism. Likenesses of Muhammad are considered highly offensive by fundamentalists. You know, just like the fundamentalist response to, let's see, 50 years ago, it was the fundamentalist response to black people in America. Now it's the fundamentalist response to gay people in America. You know, Fred Phelps is a fundamentalist. If you sat down Fred Phelps and Osama bin Laden to tea together, they'd come out walking arm in arm, because they'd realize how much they had to agree on. No gambling, no, you know, women are dirty, you know, the whole thing. She's being held on a blasphemy charge, but she has yet to be charged with an official offense. Insulting Islam is punishable with up to 40 lashes. You know, this just makes me feel kind of sick, because I've spent so much time, especially back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, defending American Muslims against right-wing freaks. And again, it's not American Muslims doing this. I don't think American Muslims would demand that a woman be whipped for naming a teddy bear Muhammad. But before we get real, you know, up in arms about, you know, those crazy Muslims, please remember the words of William Donahue, head of the Catholic League, when a man made a life-size Jesus on a cross out of chocolate.
"They're defaming my Lord. He's naked, and he's got all the parts that a human being has when he's a naked man who's getting crucified, and they're made out of chocolate." Well,
you know how it is with these fundamentalists.
"I want to lick my Lord. He's chocolate."
Police have decided in Khartoum that Gibbons had acted in good faith, that if police... A Sudanese official says that if police decided that Gibbons had acted in good faith, she would most likely be spared punishment. She's already been kept in a hellhole of a Khartoum jail, mind you. If the intentions are good, definitely she will be absolved and will be cautioned not to repeat this thing again, said Muhif Sadiq, Sudan's Undersecretary for Foreign Affairs. He then added, to give the name of Mohammed to this teddy bear, it was considered an insult by some parents, and this school is mixed, it is not all Christian students. Lord. See, this really brings out all the rotten parts of me that I hate so much. You know how I am with ancient history. Long before long before Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer ever walked the dirty sands of the Middle East, there was Plato and Socrates. About, 400 years before Jesus. And in the Socratic dialogues, there is a discussion that Plato puts in the mouth of Socrates, in which Socrates inquires as to the nature of justice. You know, he was forever doing this, the nature of good, the nature of justice, the nature of mercy. And he said, what does it mean if you do good to people who do good to you? What's the good in that? That's easy. That's expected. That's normal. That's natural. The truly just person does good to those who do him evil. And that is why the early church so-called fathers sort of grandfathered Plato and Socrates into Christianity as a sort of nascent Christianity, like inspired by God, the twisted thought processes of the church fathers. And that was later put to the test in Syracuse, the city-state of Syracuse on the island of Sicily, when a man named Dion, who had been associated with the Academy, which was Plato's school based upon Socratic principles, Dion, after years of civil war and strife in Syracuse, Dion took control and began putting some of his principles to work. And there were people who had sought Dion's end. He forgave them. Now, bear in mind, the fundamentalists would tell you that nobody can be, the Christian values were new. No, they weren't. He pardoned his enemies and allowed them to continue to live in the Syracusan state, no punishment, no nothing. Dion was, of course, assassinated by the same people he had pardoned. So, the stories of this evil crap being perpetrated by fundamentalists in places like Saudi Arabia and Sudan really put me and my values to a challenge. Because I understand, I also recognize that we have several different layers of mentality in our own beings, our brains, whatever. And my little lizard brain wants Gordon Brown to pick up the phone, call Sudan, and say, if you harm one hair of Jillian Gibbons's head, we will rain death and destruction on you until you will be unrecognizable from space. Again, that's my lizard brain. That's my, basic hairless chimpanzee dancing with a bone around the monolith kind of haven't evolved very much side of me. I hate this fundamentalist evil. 40 lashes, and it ain't, like I said, with a wet noodle, 40 lashes for a teddy bear getting named Muhammad. What, she's supposed to look at the little 7-year-olds and say, no, you blasphemous little evil twits, you can't name that teddy bear Muhammad, that's heresy. And then give each of the little 7th graders 40 lashes? You see what a terrible, terrible hole we start digging into when we start saying that some fundamentalism is okay, but others are not? Sheesh. Maybe that's the beauty of the First Amendment. We tolerate all this crap over here because it's assumed that as long as we tolerate it all, everyone has to tolerate everyone else. Of course, our fundamentalists have proven that they're unwilling to do that. You know, they've proven that when they, you know, murder abortion doctors, women's health physicians, when they murder nurses who work in women's health clinics. And yeah, I will happily judge all fundamentalists by those actions because they make it necessary for me to do so. So as long as we've got fundamentalism of any stripe, any flavor, any religion, any faith, you're going to continue to have stories of fundamentalist Muslims beating the hide off of women for teddy bears or, you know, going to retrieve a photograph and accidentally getting raped. It's like one of my favorite authors, Tom Robbins, put at the end of Still Life with Woodpecker. Everything is part of it. Everything is part of it. Is there a Sudanese embassy you can call? Is there a Saudi embassy you can call? There is darn sure a Saudi embassy you can call in Washington, D.C., and you can let whatever little scum-sucking secretary answers the phone know what you think of their pathetic, benighted, miserable, godforsaken, hole-in-the-world, sand-ridden culture that beats 19-year-old women. Okay. So I'm not going to camp out there tonight. There's too many other stories out there, one of which I really, really want to get to. And it has to do with West Virginia, and it has to do with setting up the Wayback Machine. I've got some audio I want to play for you from way, way back, pre-November 2004. We have a Supreme Court justice here in West Virginia whose name is Brent Benjamin. Brent Benjamin is another one of those people that I would not go across the street to spit on. He is literally not worth my spit. You've heard me talk many times about Don Blankenship, who runs Massey Energy. Don Blankenship is single-handedly responsible for putting Brent Benjamin on the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia. He defeated an incumbent Supreme Court justice named Warren McGraw, who was a good man. He defeated Warren McGraw, Blankenship did, by smearing him in the most filthy terms. He wanted Brent Benjamin on the Supreme Court of Appeals because he had a judgment of $50 million against Massey Energy Corporation for some really filthy, vile business practices that Massey had engaged in destroying another man's business in this state. It was Harmon Energy versus Massey Energy. And the case was tried in Boone County, West Virginia, tried to a jury. The jury returned a verdict of around $50 million because they found that Don Blankenship had stared them in the eye under oath and lied like the filthy dog that he is. Well, it took a lot of money. It took money in the millions of dollars, and it took a smear campaign, the likes of which I have never seen. I mean, I've seen some dirty, vile, you know, Willie Horton, things like that. I've never seen anything as filthy as what Don Blankenship did in regard to Warren McGraw's campaign to retain his seat on the Supreme Court. Because, well, I'll let the old audio speak for itself, but in case there's any question, Don Blankenship re-raped a little boy to get his hand-picked man on the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia. So like I said, we're going to time travel now. This will take a few minutes. It might be 15, 20 minutes long. I don't think it's too terribly boring. But we're going to go back because I went and found this when I read up today on a recent development with regard to Massey Energy and Harmon Mining and what Massey Energy did to Harmon Mining. And they were able to do it only because Don Blankenship was able to put his hand-picked little judicial toy on the bench of the Supreme Court of West Virginia. And wait until I tell you the rest of the story afterward. Because, you see, last week, the day before Thanksgiving, when nobody was looking, the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, thanks to Brent Benjamin, told Massey Energy that it did not have to ever, ever, ever pay Harmon Mining the $50 million that it owed. So this is from, I think about October 2004. I want you to hear the story of Tony Arbaugh if you've never heard it before, and I want you to see where Don Blankenship has taken West Virginia and our judicial system.
Hey, welcome back. Yeah, about 22 minutes left in this Tuesday night edition of Head On with me, Bob Kincaid. And you guys have made it a dandy. Had a lot of fun tonight. And just so you'll know, you know, I was going through the list of all the land-raping corporate pimps who want to steal the West Virginia court system from you and me, you know, your own ones. And just so you'll know, I didn't even begin to get through the list. That's how voluminous it was, the number of people that love Brent Benjamin $1,000 at a time so that he can sit on the court and cheat West Virginians out of fairness and justice and close the doors of the courthouse to ordinary West Virginians who have had their homes literally washed away as a result of what these extractive industry corporate killer thugs do to them. Bought and paid for. And when you think about things like this, before you get suckered into things like the Tony Arbaugh case, think about Tony Arbaugh himself for a minute. Because if you bother to find out any of the facts about Tony Arbaugh that these Massey punks are keeping from you, you might even get a little bit mad, because every now and then you look up and you think, there but for the grace of God goes John Smith. Tony Arbaugh, my God, talk about being born behind the eight ball. The kid was sexually abused, let's use the word, not assault. A little boy was raped repeatedly by people in the school system, by people in his family, and by the time he was a young teenager. Remember, this is a juvenile case. By the time he was a young teenager, he acted out and he did what had been done to him to someone else. And so another victim was thrown in the chain of agony and pain. But it's not politically expedient for the kill jocks behind Brent Benjamin to tell you that. It's not politically expedient to tell you that Tony Arbaugh had been punished within the system for years before the issue of his parole violation came up. That's not politically expedient. We talk about justice, but an equal measure of what any court and any judge does, at least in a country like ours where we talk about Christian values and then many of you go to the voting booths and flush those Christian values down the toilet when you vote Republican. No, they don't tell you about Tony Arbaugh. And I want to tell you about Tony Arbaugh. I want you to see this in your sleep, you good-for-nothing Republicans. You supporters of Brent Benjamin, you supporters of earth rape, you supporters of poison in our drinking water, I want you to see little Tony Arbaugh in your dreams having done to him things that would make you weep to even contemplate happening to someone you don't like. I want you to see it. And I want you to think for just a minute. I want you to put yourself in Tony Arbaugh's place, because you know what? It could happen. It could happen to you. It could happen to someone you love. And you don't even have to be a bad parent for it to happen to your kid. I'm not going to get graphic. That might be dirty. Not half as dirty as 1,100 retroactively aborted mothers' babies in the sands of Iraq because George Bush lost his patience. No. I'm not going to get obscene. But you know what was done to a child named Tony Arbaugh. And you know you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy. I wouldn't wish it on a Republican's child. And you hop up and down, you little ditto monkeys, and you scream that we've got to be tough on crime. You make me sick. How very delightfully Republican it is of you to argue for the continued punishment of a kid like Tony Arbaugh, who, part and parcel of what happened to him, developed a drug and booze problem. You know what? We are lucky as a society that we succeeded enough with Tony Arbaugh that all he developed was a drug and booze problem. We are lucky as a society that we succeeded enough with Tony Arbaugh that he didn't develop a murder problem. Aren't we? But you won't hear that from the good-for-nothing, living-in-the-gutter, single, sick-minded Republican Party, will you? No, you won't. You will not hear that Justice McGraw and Justice Albright and Justice Starcher did that one thing which is the noblest quality in the men and women we set up to allow to judge us. You will not consider that they did what you would most pray they might do were it someone you cared about in the same situation. No, you won't do that. Mercy is for you good people, not for trash like Tony Arbaugh. Every now and then I run across an issue where it just bubbles up out of me, and I guess I apologize for it in advance. I don't know if I do or not. But you punishment fetishist Republicans who want to heap a little bit more hell on Tony Arbaugh can go there promptly for all I care. To hell with you hateful people. But Bob, we're in church every time the door's open. You're not getting anything out of it, brothers and sisters. You ask yourself, would Jesus Christ reach out to Tony Arbaugh? Or would he be Pharisees like you Republicans are and say, get a rope! God, you make me sick with your hate-driven agenda. Brent Benjamin is a good family man. How good a family man is any man who stands up and defends corporate polluters while they dump garbage and poison into the waters that your children and my children drink and bathe in and have their clothing washed in and have cooked with? What kind of a family man is that? So if you are indeed hell-bent on voting for Brent Benjamin, and trust me, when you pull that lever, punch that Chad, fill that oval, touch that screen for Brent Benjamin, you believe me, you are hell-bent. You remember little Tony Arbaugh bent over. You remember tears. You remember blood. And you remember the sick punishment frenzy of your Republican cohorts, these stealth punks from Massey who will not even stand up and be counted in their slimy, sickening attack on Warren McGraw for the simple and yet so complex act of mercy that he signed on to. You remember that.
But Brent Benjamin has family values.
Bug spray! Brent Benjamin has the values of whoever is signing his check. And from what I hear, it's a mighty tasty check. You must remember that on the mount, Satan said to Jesus Christ, "Look! It can all be yours. All you need do is bow down and worship me." Brent Benjamin has been to that same mount. And people like Ashland Oil, and Massey, and Arch have stood behind him and said, "Look down upon it all. It can all be yours. All you need do is worship us." And Brent Benjamin turned his back on humankind and bent down on both knees and showed what he thought of the rest of us to us when he bent and bowed and scraped and kowtowed before the people that would lay waste your and my state, our state. What do you think of a man who would do that? What profiteth it a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Brent Benjamin's soul is bought and paid for, sunshine. And he has proven to us that he will not be one of those extraordinary judges. Measures justice in the same cup with mercy. I would not cross the street to speak to the man, for he is beneath me. Because when he sold out, When he put his soul up for purchase by the highest corporate bidder, he lost his right to count himself among the decent and the good. I don't much care if you like these facts, but they are facts. The money pours into his coffers from these corporate killers and poisoners. And it's not done out of altruism or any decent thing. It is done as a simple transactional purchase, like a prostitute sells her body to the first purchaser on a rainy, cold night just to get in from the storm. That is the deal that Brent Benjamin has made. And he didn't make it with you, and he didn't make it for you. He made it for himself. He made it for houses and cars and nice vacations. And the question is, you who hold yourselves so mighty and moral, put in the same position, would you sell the same thing? What profiteth it a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Do you get it? Have you figured it out yet? Have you figured out why it is that none of Brent Benjamin's commercials talk about what he will or can do? He can't tell you what he will or can do for one simple reason. What he can and will do is not in your best interest. What he can and will do is what he has already done. He has sold his soul. And I guess that's his business, but when you sell your own soul, but part of the bargaining price is my rights, and your state, and your air, and your water, and your mountains, then I think we have a right to object to the bargain. Don't you? Can you muster up a little bit of indignation? Can you think about Tony Arbaugh? All Brent Benjamin sees when he sees Tony Arbaugh is a political opportunity to affect the mouth breathers and the knuckle draggers of the Republican Party. That's what he sees. Brent Benjamin does not have the fundamental, decent, basic human compassion to occupy a seat on the highest court in this state. Because when you can look and you can read the facts in the case of what happened to Tony Arbaugh, and all you can see is a political opportunity, you are walking without a soul. Don't tell me he's a family man. Don't tell me he's got good family values. Because Tony Arbaugh is a young man now, but when this all happened to him, he was a child. And Benjamin has trotted out the time he has spent in court on child abuse and neglect cases. Bite me, Brent. Because if you gave a damn about any of those children you represented, you wouldn't be talking and allowing your buddies in the extraction industry, your Massey pals, to be out slandering and libeling Tony Arbaugh for things that were set in motion with which he had nothing to do. Do you think that little boy asked to be raped? Do you? How was it Tony Arbaugh's fault? And what kind of pitiful semblance of humanity, what kind of pitiful scum uses a case like that in a political campaign? Look, West Virginia, we've got our own Willie Horton now. That's just... You know, I talked... I need a bath. I want a shower. This is not pleasant to talk about. But somebody had to. And I'm about the only somebody in this whole blessed state who is willing to. So if you are hell-bent, and you are hell-bent if you do this, on voting for George Bush and Brent Benjamin and that ilk, at least know what you're voting for. But consider what you're voting for. You're voting, in Brent Benjamin's case, for a man who thinks the rape of a little boy, more than one little boy, is political fodder. That, I submit to you, is perversion in the highest degree. That's it tonight. Thanks to Jeff. Doc Pulliam. Try to be nice to him. I hope he doesn't think it was mean to him. Okay, so that was almost 4 years ago. That was 3 years ago and change. And true to what I said, Brent Benjamin did everything we expected. Brent Benjamin was funded and financed entirely by right-wing scum like Don Blankenship, who wanted Brent Benjamin on the court for one reason and one reason only. He knew that if the incumbent remained on the court, the completely just, fair, and utterly regular verdict in excess of $50 million that had been levied against him would be upheld, and he would have to pay. But if he could find a way to get his hand-picked toad, his little lick spittle, Brent Benjamin, on the court, then he knew he stood a good shot of getting away with his foul and dirty dealings. So, to review, a coal baron in West Virginia, and it's his accomplices in the Republican Party, used a little boy who had been raped as a means of attacking an incumbent justice of the Supreme Court here. How did they do it? Well, you see, Justice McGraw had actually participated in extending some mercy to this young man on a probation violation. Benjamin went around the state screaming, you know, string him up, put him in prison, and things like, Justice McGraw was going to turn a child rapist loose in our schools. Because at one time there had been some talk of the rape victim, Tony Arbaugh, pushing a broom as a janitor in some school building. And that was how they sleazed Warren McGraw. All to save Don Blankenship $50 million plus. And that is exactly what has happened. The verdict was announced the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, too late to get it into the newspapers, and by Friday, with all the inserts for the sales at Penny's and Sears and Elder Beerman and Walmart and yada, 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 the story had completely disappeared. Bribery is now legal in West Virginia, so long as you are a member of the Supreme Court. Brent Benjamin was bribed with his political campaign to do this dirty work. He refused to recuse himself from this case, even though he was conflicted up to his single eyebrow. This is among the sickest politics that I have ever seen anywhere. And as of last Wednesday, now Brent Benjamin didn't write the opinion, he just voted in it. He just sat there and breathed out and breathed in again. That's what he was bribed to do. And he let Don Blankenship get away with it.
even though, mind you, even though the majority opinion states that Massey was guilty of everything it had been found liable for. Justice Larry Starcher, who is a fine, fine man, dissented from the case, and he said, "Make no mistake, a West Virginia jury heard from all the witnesses for both sides and decided that Mr. Don Blankenship directed an illegal scheme to break Mr. Hugh Caperton's business. No one says that the jury was wrongly instructed. No one says they didn't hear all the evidence. In fact, the majority opinion concedes, quote, the facts of this case demonstrate that Massey's conduct warranted the type of judgment rendered in this case, unquote. Yes, that's right. The majority of the members of this court says that the Boone County jury's verdict was fully justified. Therefore, in this aspect, says Justice Starcher, our court's opinion is unanimous. Let's not forget why the jury's verdict was justified. The jurors looked Mr. Blankenship in the eye and concluded that he was lying and that Mr. Caperton was telling the truth. The majority opinion says that doesn't matter. It all should have been handled in Virginia, to which argument one must respond, and this is a judicial opinion, horse pucky. And he adds, I would be remiss, because you have to understand how filthy this case has been. Don Blankenship just drips feces wherever he walks. He is that vile. Starcher says, I would be remiss if I did not briefly speak to the multiple claims made by the Massey parties that I should remove myself from the consideration of the instant case because I have publicly decried the one-man smear tactics that Mr. Blankenship brought to our most recent Supreme Court election. As a constitutional officer elected by the people, I have a right and duty to speak out about the administration of our justice system, including the conduct of judicial elections. I can have opinions and still do my job fairly. I do decry murder and domestic violence, and I speak out on it, and I also sit as a judge and hear cases involving people who are charged with those offenses. I am one judge voting on this case who can say that I owe nothing to Mr. Blankenship one way or another. He did nothing to hurt or hinder my election. He did not fund my campaign, nor am I a social friend of his. It has been amusing for me to see Mr. Blankenship trying with all his might to create the circumstances where I would be forced to step aside and let him have in toto the kind of court he wants. For example, he has said he will be targeting me in the next election if I run. That's how Blankenship talks. He talks about targeting people. If you or I talked about targeting a politician, we would be behind bars. Because that's shooting language, folks. Fortunately, says Justice Starcher, the public can see through this kind of transparent foolishness, just as a West Virginia jury saw through his lies in court. What is sad is that a majority of this court is telling a West Virginia jury that their work to bring about justice was a complete waste. It was. Brent Benjamin has just slapped the good people of the state of West Virginia right in the face. But it gets worse. Fill in a few details on the Tony Arbaugh case. Tony Arbaugh was a rape victim. And Brent Benjamin, via Don Blankenship, who created a phony social service group called And For the Sake of the Children, funneled millions of dollars into Brent Benjamin's campaign. And For the Sake of the Kids still hasn't given a single pair of tennis shoes, not a jacket, not a coat, not a pair of socks to a single child in West Virginia. But they've gotten away with this. Now, a couple of days later, there was a news story in the West Virginia papers showing that Justice Albright, who also dissented from this decision, had been passed over to be Chief Justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court next term. Now, bear in mind, Chief Justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court isn't quite like being Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. The position changes annually. And it just goes on a rotational basis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bang, 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 bang. So it was a little bit extraordinary to see the Supreme Court vote to pass over Justice Albright and instead select as Chief Justice. Come on, you're part of the, you've got it now, you figured it out. Chief Justice for the coming term will be Brent Benjamin. The same sleazy bastard who took Don Blankenship's money to get in office so that he could do Don Blankenship's bidding. Sleazy, sleazy, sleazy. Now, the Massey case is over. Why on earth would Brent Benjamin need to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? Well, you see, it's all a deal with the devil here. Because the opinion that let Massey off the hook was authored by Chief Justice Robin Davis. Okay? She authored this decision letting A.T. Massey get away with a filthy scheme that destroyed a man's business and wrecked his life. That was her part in the bargain. Coming up in the next term of the court here is a case that involves a great deal of oil and natural gas fraud from one of the richest oil and natural gas reserves in the eastern United States in a place called Roane County, West Virginia. It has a humongous verdict. Lead trial counsel for the plaintiffs is a man by the name of Scott Siegel. Scott Siegel is the husband of West Virginia Supreme Court Chief Justice Robin Davis. They are multi-millionaires. Robin Davis has to recuse herself from that case in order to make sure that the verdict stands. She has to have a replacement justice in there who will do her bidding. Joe Albright, who was supposed to be the coming Chief Justice, could not be counted on to hand-pick someone who would protect Scott Siegel's verdict. Brent Benjamin, however, with whom she had already made a deal with the devil, could. So consequently, Brent Benjamin, Robin Davis, and a justice by the name of Elliot Spike Maynard voted to skip over the normal procedure for selecting the coming year's Chief Justice and irregularly and out of order make Brent Benjamin the Chief Justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court. Have your eyes rolled back in your head yet? I hope not. Because this is a little picture of what happens when filthy, polluting, anti-democratic, anti-election, anti-freedom corporatists from the energy industry really get their all 4 feet into the trough. Justice is dead in West Virginia. As a side note, I should tell you that I had to run downtown today to, you know, it was the usual, every so often, you know, you're taking cholesterol medication, so you got to go and get some blood drawn, and, you know, mine separates into blood and bacon grease. But you got to, you know, so they can check your liver enzymes and make sure that the pills aren't killing you. On the way back, I passed a convoy of coal trucks forming up. Sitting in a parking lot at the top of the hill going out of town were no less than one dozen coal trucks. Guess where they were going? Right through Anstead, West Virginia, and right up to the mountaintop removal site that we were at a couple of weeks ago for the blessing of the mountains. Made possible by a corrupt West Virginia government that doesn't give a damn about families who live in the way of their coal. And it's only going to get worse. I was sitting here a little bit earlier while Guy James was running, and I heard a distant noise that sounded like thunder. And I opened the door and I stuck my head out and I heard it again, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. And I realized that the bombing has begun. The bombing of this little corner of the world. Because we have no representation. Because coal companies are more important than my children or any of the other children that live around here. Because mountaintop removal is more important than schools or churches or old folks or home foundations or wells. The most important thing in the world here is coal. Dead vegetation, dead animals from a bygone era millions of years ago. And somehow, even to this day, it trumps human life. It'll be a dozen today. It'll be 24 tomorrow. Pretty soon you won't be able to turn from my little road out onto US 60 without taking your life in your hands, because the road crests right at our intersection and you can't see more than 100 yards when you're turning onto the highway and these monsters barrel along at 60 and 70 miles an hour on a little tiny two-lane road. So I just, I don't know, I thought you deserved to know a little bit. Maybe you get tired of the West Virginia stories. You know, maybe I should spend, no. If this program can't be real, if this program can't be about things that affect us on a personal level, we're not much different from anything else going on anywhere else, and we might as well start running the ads about the bowling balls that pick up the vacuum cleaners and the herbal erection remedies. Because this is personal. When your judicial system in any given state has been utterly and completely and hopelessly corrupted, it becomes very, very personal. And by the way, just in case you're wondering, when do we get to throw Brent Benjamin out? A term on the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia is 12 years long. So for the next 8 years, at a minimum, A.T. Massey, Arch Coal, Peabody, Amvest Corp are going to be able to get away with whatever they want. And not a blessed thing that you or I can do about it. Unless something happens on a national level. Here in West Virginia, we have no redress to our local courts. Because our local courts sit under the oversight of a bought and paid for Supreme Court. And any judgment against A.T. Massey that goes up will be overturned. Because Brent Benjamin has a lot of payback to make. And Robin Davis has a lot of payback to make. Spike Maynard has a lot of payback to make. The only hope and the only help that we will get will come if you, outside West Virginia, will absolutely wear out your elected representatives demanding that some help be given to America's very own third world country, Appalachia. Because there will be no representative help in Kentucky, nor Virginia, nor Tennessee, nor West Virginia. Our help must come from distant hands. So, that's that. If you want to talk about it, I welcome you to. If you want to talk about something else, we can do that too. You know the phone number, of course. Toll free, it's 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you've got a unlimited long-distance dialing plan, you can dial 304-658-5453. Mail rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. Any old way you want to reach us will be fine. So, you know, I welcome you to do so. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back after the news.
Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way.
This is the Quality News Network. An independent Palestinian state could soon be a possibility as Israeli and Palestinian leaders agree to immediately restart long-stalled peace talks early next month. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Annapolis, Maryland, President Bush read a joint statement drafted by Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas, who say discussions could begin in December with full agreement reached by late next year. In the past 48 hours, Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 7 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Israelis say the men all belong to Hamas. In Hebron, West Bank, a protest against the peace talks brought clashes between those loyal to Palestinian leader Abbas and Islamists who call him a traitor. One demonstrator was shot and killed during the skirmishes. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said farewell to his troops today. He is expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. Then, on Thursday, Musharraf will be sworn in as a civilian Pakistani president. 6 unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. forces north of Baghdad in the past 48 hours. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a Baghdad checkpoint, killing 9 Iraqi policemen. Iran's defense minister says his country has developed a new missile capable of reaching Israel and U.S. military bases in the Middle East. The 1,200-mile missile has not yet been tested. The defense ministers of South and North Korea held a landmark meeting today to discuss resolution of a long-standing border dispute in the West Sea. and China is warning the U.S. not to support Taiwan's bid to be seated in the U.N. Beijing also has demanded the U.S. stop selling weaponry to the island republic Communist China claims as its own. The U.S. Conference of Mayors says another 1.4 million Americans could lose their homes next year as a result of the collapsing mortgage market. Property values are expected to plunge an additional 7%. And in Sacramento, state and federal officials are investigating a dredging project by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation that has killed thousands of game fish. Bureau drained water around a protected island, apparently without knowing the number of fish in that area. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Financial aid to help third world nations adapt to more floods, droughts, and other changes due to global warming will cost the richest nations an estimated $86 billion a year by 2015. According to a panel of experts commissioned by the United Nations, half the cost, or around $44 billion, will go to improvements on infrastructure in those countries. Funding has been obtained to start construction on an undersea cable linking Europe to East Africa. The revolutionary project will provide reliable and relatively inexpensive telecommunications in East Africa for the very first time. Financial management software maker Intuit will acquire Homestead Technologies, the deal valued at $170 million. A site just south of Seoul, Korea has been chosen for the new Universal Studios theme park resort. Developers of the $3.1 billion project expect that park to be popular with the burgeoning Chinese middle class. The price of oil fell yesterday, closing at $97.70 a barrel. Traders are reacting to rumors OPEC will increase crude production when the cartel meets next week. Currently, light sweet crude oil trading at $94.42 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 215 points to end at 12,958, NASDAQ up 40 points, S&P 500 up 21. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, here we go again. Hour number two in the sandbox. I've got a beach ball. And let's see, let's go straight to the phones. Susan is calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome aboard.
I got a shovel and a pail I'd like to thump somebody with.
And a hole in the backyard.
Yeah. By the way, my representatives are really getting tired of me going on and on about West Virginia and mountaintop removal. They have a hard time connecting why I'm so upset about it.
But you go on just the same, right?
Oh, yeah. And then I explain to them why I'm upset about it in profound detail.
That's profound, yeah. Not profane.
Oh, heavens, no.
Not you. Not sweet little you.
Not profane. I save the profane stuff for stuff like this. H.R. 1955.
Yes.
A really symbolic number. The Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007.
I've read a little bit about this.
by a Democrat, or at least that's what she calls herself.
Okay, continue.
This vote, this bill originated in the House, was passed by a vote of 404-6.
Okay, hold on. You're breaking up a little bit. Okay, let's try this again. The bill was passed the House. Okay.
By a vote of 404-6.
Gee-miny.
If I would suggest people, when they get a chance, call representatives Abercrombie, Costello, Duncan, Blake, Kucinich, and Rohrabacher. That's three Democrats, three Republicans. They are the only ones who voted against this bill.
And Dana Rohrabacher's insane, so, you know, God only knows why he did. But, yeah, let's talk a little bit about the bill rather than just jumping into who flung dung. That would mean that my congressman voted for it. That would mean the entire West Virginia congressional delegation voted for it.
So did the entire Oregon delegation, and I screamed bloody murder at them.
It is, again, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007.
Uh-huh.
It will go to the Senate floor.
Right now it's in the Homeland Security Committee.
Of the Senate.
The Senate bill is SR 1959.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest you call your senators about this because, in effect, what it does is it recreates the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Yeah, I better get my suit pressed.
Yeah. What it does is it allows this committee to define terrorist
as basically anybody it wants to.
Yeah, basically.
It defines ideologically based violence as the use, planned use, or threatened use of force or violence by a group or individual to promote the group or individual's political, religious, or social beliefs.
In other words, if I call up my representative and say, straighten up or you're going to be out of a job, they will put me on a terror watch list.
Sure. Or and this is some more language from the bill, just because, you know, this is internet radio and this is theoretically who it could be aimed at. Now, we're not advocating violent overthrow of anything, but it doesn't have to be violent overthrow within the language of this stupid bill. It charges that the internet, Susan, quote, has aided in facilitating violent radicalization, ideologically based violence, and the homegrown terrorism process in the United States by providing access to broad and constant streams of terrorist related propaganda to United States citizens. Huh?
Yeah. There goes First Amendment.
Yeah, what? I go to Al Jazeera's webpage to look up the story on the Saudi woman having the hide beaten off of her, and suddenly, you know, I'm engaging in homegrown terrorism?
Yeah. All I can say is Timothy McVeigh is laughing his ass off in hell.
Gotta be.
Because we're doing it to ourselves.
Well, you know, dear leader told us that if we didn't go shopping, the terrorists win. Guess what? The terrorists won. Yeah, we don't even go into, like, double overtime for this one. They won.
No, this is just appalling. Where's
Let's see. On board officially opposing this hateful legislation, the National Lawyers Guild, the Society of American Law Teachers... Let's see, adopting or promoting an extremist belief, this is violent radicalism, okay? Adopting or promoting an extremist belief system for the purpose of facilitating ideologically based violence to advance political, religious, or social change. The legislation does not define extremist belief system.
Nope.
That could be liberalism. That could be nationalism, socialism, anarchism, communism. It could be conservatism.
Exactly. What I cannot fathom is...
SR 1959, right?
Yeah. What I cannot fathom is why in the world this bill ever saw the light of day.
Well, I can tell you why. This is an easy one. This is like going... you go home for Christmas break and you tell your constituents, my fellow Americans, I have stood up against homegrown terrorism.
Yeah.
When I get back to Congress, we's going to work on the flag-burning amendment.
Yeah. I think I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, now that I have got everybody down and depressed and beyond belief...
You didn't do that. I did that in the last hour. Don't worry, we were already down there in the mud.
Anyway... it is possible to kill this bill, but it's going to take a massive effort of people calling their senators.
Yeah.
So everybody, call both your senators. I don't care if they're right-wing freakazoid. Tell them what it will do.
Call them, email them, yeah.
Because this could even go on against the right-wingers.
Well, the fact of the matter is, when it comes to homegrown terrorism, the conservatives have more to fear than we do. I don't want to blow up any of my fellow Americans. I don't want to shoot any of my fellow Americans. On the other hand, conservatives freely shoot medical professionals, nurses. They blow up federal buildings in Oklahoma. They have their own little columnist who writes things like the only thing wrong with what Timothy McVeigh did is he didn't blow up the New York Times building. That would be Ann Coulter.
Yeah.
They've got people like Pat Robertson who say that a nuclear device should be set off at the United States State Department.
Yep. So, the right-wingers in point of fact, they probably won't, but technically they could be. This could be used against them.
Yeah, it could be, but it won't be.
No,
it's the see, I think the most important word in this entire bunch of garbage is the word internet.
Yes, internet is exactly right. Welcome to China.
Don't you suppose that maybe the broadcasters... drop the dime on this issue, Susan? The internet's a dangerous place.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here at the Head On Radio Network. We're a threat. We're not a threat to anybody's way of life. We're not a threat to anybody in any of our fellow Americans. But we are a threat, and every other internet broadcaster is as well, to CBS, to ABC, to NBC, to the Westwood One Radio Network. We're a threat, all right, because we're the future, Susan.
Yeah, not to mention the Internet is also a threat to AT&T, Verizon, and all those other goodies because a lot of people are switching to voice over IP.
True, too. All right, well, Susan, thank you very much.
You have a really nice day, and my love to Agnes and the kids.
All right, thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
And you're a busy signal. And you're a busy signal.
And hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm okay.
What's going on?
Well, I don't know if you heard that Oprah is endorsing Barack Obama.
Yeah, I saw that somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the year, I think, that a lot of these, you know, what... W.E.B. Du Bois so eloquently said the Townsend Tenth,
mm-hmm.
really going to find out where they really stand, 2008, in terms of their place in America.
Well, it may be. Of course, I can... I don't know how to take Oprah getting in behind Senator Obama. I mean, if you sat Oprah down and really told her some of the stuff that I mean, doesn't she want us to have universal health care that doesn't involve the insurance industry?
I don't even think she's thinking on that level, though. You see, Oprah...
Well, what level is she thinking on?
Okay, here's a guy from her state, the state where she made her fame and fortune. You know, it's kind of like the same level as Chuck Levin. I mean, Senator Levin, my senator now.
Oh, Schumer.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here, Kevin.
Yeah, my senator now.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer backing, what's his name?
Mukasey.
You know, it's the whole...
Just because he's a local?
I think so. Me, personally, Barack Obama is not really running for president. He's running for vice president, and I keep on telling people that. You know, he's really running for vice president. And I think Oprah, in a way, backing him, may have assured whoever becomes the Democratic nominee, he will be vice president.
That seems an awful lot just for the VP slot. I think she means for him to win.
It's not going to happen because you know why? First of all, the first...
Well, he's out in front in Iowa now.
So?
No, I mean, that's out in front in Iowa with a little more than a month to go.
Yeah, so? My thing is, the first thing, when you think about a black man becoming a front runner for president, think reparations. And that's what... You see, I always say, if you want to defeat your opponent in anything, you got to think like your opponent. Or you got to put yourself, or if you need something from someone, you got to put yourself in their place. Why should I put this guy along? And I think the question that a lot of mid-American white males are going to have is, okay, here we have this black man as president. What if the issue of slavery reparations go through?
Do you think that would really become an issue, though?
To them, it will. It shouldn't be an issue to begin with, because my idea of reparations, believe it or not, would probably benefit mostly white people than black people.
How so?
Because my idea of reparations is universal health care, overhaul of our transportation system. The same things you want, I want, Bob. Plain and simple.
Yeah, because we're liberals, progressives, because we're decent people and we love our country.
We're human beings.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, hooray, because that's what I keep preaching. Until the day comes when we see ourselves not as defined by our race or our religion or our geographic point of origin, but by our shared common humanity, until that day comes, we're going to continue to have these god-awful problems.
Yeah. And my thing is, that's what's going to come up. You see... You know, you gotta. I think, and you're probably more around them now than I am. The narrow-mindedness of a bigot, which is, you know, black man president, black man, you know, black man who is really in charge of my life. I don't think many white males are going to surrender. You know, that's the way they think. That's the way a conservative thinks.
Well, I understand that, Kevin, and let's be clear on this. I don't see that as being the majority thinking of males, white, black, or otherwise in this country. And if it comes down to a situation where Senator Obama is the nominee, those will not be who that is. That won't be who this is pointed at. Now, bear in mind, Harold Ford is not my idea of what a good senator would have been. It would have been nice to have had his additional number in the Senate as opposed to that, what's his name, creepy dude from Tennessee that Peyton Manning gave money to. Corker. But it's worth remembering that the Republicans refined the tactic they will use against Barack Obama in the Corker-Ford campaign in Tennessee. Because if you want to beat a Barack Obama... You don't need every man. You don't need to No, you need 1 or 2%, and that's all they had to mobilize with that Harold, call me, you know, with the jungle drums and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You only need to motivate 1 or 2% of the electorate, and bang, you're in.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about a 51-49, 50-47 with 3% voting for, you know, Ron Paul or a Martian or whatever. That's the margin you're dealing with, and that advertising will be aimed at.
Well, you know, low voter turnout has always benefited Republicans because anyhow we had Australian rules voting where if you don't vote, you'll pay a fine. As a party, the Republicans will be dead.
Yeah.
And, you know...
The story that came out a few days ago where the... I forget which department it was. Oh, we won't be able to process the paperwork to allow the new citizens to vote this time through. Sorry! Yeah, they can't do the paperwork.
Yeah.
I think our good friend Matt Sowards of the Sowards Report mentioned this on his program this weekend. You know, that's not how bureaucracy works. You deal with the stuff that comes to you. You don't announce well in advance that you can't deal with it, so you just won't be bothered.
Yeah. I just think, really, you know, the talented 10th within Black America is going to find out where they really stand in 2008. And, you know, that... And be prepared for a huge disappointment. And like you said, you know, Barack Obama is going to be Howell Ford.
And that's the point I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
You'll have, and it won't be anything nearly as overt as jungle drums and a white woman saying, "Harold, call me." It'll be Barack Hussein Obama.
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe morph him into Saddam Hussein's picture like they did with Max Cleland and Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
I got a really interesting email, since we're on this topic. I got a really interesting email over the weekend talking about this very issue. Apparently, if you go through your spell checker... if you write an email, I got to find this here. I'm thinking it came in early on Saturday, perhaps. If you type Obama into your spell checker, it will correct it to Osama. Oh, you think I'm kidding? I'm really, really not.
Yeah, and you know they're going to go off with that.
Oh, yeah. I was just astonished to see it.
Yeah.
It just blew me away. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to seem...
You're absolutely right, though. You know, you're absolutely right. It is a case of, you know, just the downright... narrow-mindedness. You know, in the world that...
Oh, here it is. Let me just read this outright. This came from our listener, Christy, who is in Southwest Ohio.
Yeah.
And she said, "I download your shows from the White Rose Society and listen to them fairly often. Since I do miss a few, you may have talked about this already. As we know, there have been several cases in the media where Barack Obama's name has been switched to Osama." Mitt Romney did that, I think. And she says, "I've sent out several emails lately with Obama in the body of the email. I use Outlook Express, and I have set it so it automatically checks my spelling before sending, since I'm notorious for typos. The thing I have noticed," she says, "is that it catches the name Obama and asks me if I want to replace it with Osama. Golly gee, isn't that nice," Christy says. "I'm not saying it was some big conspiracy or anything like that, but just think how many people instantly click replace thinking the word must be spelled incorrectly. Then their email would go out with Osama replacing Obama. It's just one more thing that drives that connection between Barack Obama and Osama bin Laden. The right sends out all these email forwards suggesting that Obama is a secret Muslim who's really anti-American. This sure doesn't help," she says.
It doesn't, and it's going to it's going to play on to the bigotry of that, I would say, 20% out there who are vehemently racist, and then I would say the other 30% out there who are like borderline, who are just ignorant.
Yeah.
Because I tell you, you know, I always view America as being 20% hardcore racist and the rest just being ignorant.
Well, what's that old saying? Maybe it's attributed to P.T. Barnum, Kevin. Nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people.
Yeah.
God knows Rush Limbaugh makes $30 million a year now doing nothing but overestimating the intelligence of the American people, or underestimating it, or you know what I mean. He assumes his listeners are idiots, and they prove him to be a genius every day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, because for the most part, Americans can only take one word slogans.
Culture of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, brother.
You know. If you actually say a whole sentence, then, you know, you're going to lose them.
Well, if you can't put it on a bumper sticker, we're told that the American people can't comprehend it.
Exactly.
And I'm sorry, you can't bumper sticker. I mean, what? Healthcare now? I mean, would that work?
Probably not, because they're going to say, who's going to pay for it?
Right, and so it's not necessarily about the mentality. It's the fact that these morons have been taught to be utterly resistant to anything that would actually be good for them.
And, you know, sorry to bring up, like, my, because, you know, you know my personal situation, but when I used to, like, make points to my soon-to-be ex, it would be like, oh, it's overwhelming. I don't want to deal with it. Too much.
Well, to be fair, it is overwhelming. This stuff will wear you out after a while, won't it? I mean, it...
Yeah, but the thing is, it doesn't have to if you face it and face the reality. But like I said, a lot of people just don't want to face facts, and they want to live in their willful, ignorant suburb enclave and continue to drive the SUV to and from and shop and get deeper and deeper in debt. Come on, as bad as this economy is, Bob, I think we had a record year for Black Friday.
Did we really?
Yes.
So people went out and spent.
Yeah. It's like eat, drink, and be merry, because for tomorrow we die mentality.
Well, nobody ever accused us of being into the long view.
You know, they even saying, you know, like with the housing crisis, that 2008 is going to be a very rough year, and even like the so-called happening cities like New York is going to expect a, you know, downturn in housing.
I got a feeling it's going to get real ugly, real soon.
Oh yeah, you know, now since he's stepping out of office, he's going to see to it that the Democrats have a lot of work to do when he's gone.
Yeah, well, they thought Bill Clinton would be a one-termer because he wouldn't be able to deal with the mess that 12 years of Reagan and Bush 1 had left us.
And I think people really forgot the misery that Bush the First put us through. I hope they don't forget now.
I do, too. But it's not so much about forgetting. It's about having it constantly drilled into your skull, Kevin. Is there anybody out there who's actually certifiably sane who thinks that Ronald Reagan was a good president?
Oh,
but the media tells you, oh, America loves Ronald Reagan. We need to carve his face on Mount Rushmore. You know, I'm more in favor of like putting his body under Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Well, put it this way: the ones who are sane are getting paid a lot of money to say it.
You are a cynic, sir. Just like me.
Yeah, well, put it to this way. Flash $30 million a year in my head in front of me. I may have to drink bottles of Hennessy afterwards, but I think I would say Ronald Reagan is the greatest.
Hey, where do you think Rush Limbaugh got his addiction? You got to talk the kind of crap he talks for 3 hours every day? You'll hit the pill bottle, too.
I wouldn't hit pills. Give me some Hennessy.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe a little. Yeah, and not the not the cheap stuff. Bring on the VSOP at the very least.
Or the XO.
That, yeah, bring the good stuff. Bring me the Louis. Bring me the Louis the Sixth Napoleon whatever. Yeah, the stuff where there's dust inside the bottle. Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's like you flash $30 million in front of me. You know, Bob. I'm not that principal, but my principal.
I will light my cigarettes with $100 bills.
But my principles do not come to. I'm a very principled person. I'm not that principled, but if I'm going to have to sell out, I'm not selling out cheaply. And I will say whatever they want me to say.
Well, Kevin, you take care, my friend. Have yourself a good evening.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye now. Buy cheap, sell dear. I think that's what Kevin was getting at. No, I know how he feels, because sometimes I look up and I think, you know, I could get rich if I did this for my... All I'd have to do is say I'm a conservative and bash every Democrat that breathes. I mean, Fox pays well, right? Sure. So, you know, you get the idea. Speaking, however, of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney... In his program before mine, our good friend Mark Levine mentioned his willingness to defend Mitt Romney should he be attacked for his Mormonness. Well, I want to share something with you very, very quickly, and then I'm going to go right back to the phones. This is a gem from Mitt Romney. When asked if he'd consider having a Muslim in the cabinet, Mitt Romney replied, "Based on the numbers of American Muslims in our population, I cannot see that a cabinet position would be justified." So he's going to fill the cabinet based on demographics. That means that American Muslims do constitute less than 2% of the U.S. population. With just 16 seats in the cabinet, a Romney appointee would have to represent a constituency of at least 6%. Sorry, Jews, you're out of the Romney cabinet, too. Just be content with 10% of American doctors. Here's the official ancestry of the Romney cabinet. 2.5 Germans, 2 Irish, 2 African, 1 real Anglo-Saxon, no Scandinavian substitutes, 1 legal Mexican, and 1 Italian. 4 of the members of the cabinet will be Catholic, 2 will be Baptist, 8 will be the variety pack of Protestant, and 2 won't give a damn. The Romney cabinet would also need 1 or 2 homosexuals. Only one of them has to admit it. 25% of the cabinet will be undeniably fat. Only 1 cabinet member will be alcoholic. This might be a drastic reduction, bear in mind. 1/3 of the cabinet members will experience sexual dysfunction, preferably during the cabinet meetings. But here's the fun part. Here's the real kicker, based on Mitt Romney's own demographic determinations. Since Mormons constitute less than 6% of the U.S. population, President Romney wouldn't be allowed at his own cabinet meetings. Ha! Am I that quick? Am I that sharp? Hell no. I just stole it from our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com. You see why I get a kick out of getting my RDA of irony in my email box every day? Your RDA of irony at FinnermanWorks.com. Just ask for it. It's free for the taking. Mitt Romney in his magic underwear not allowed at his own cabinet meetings. You just can't beat that with a stick. America's best internet satirist, Eugene Finnerman. And to the phones. Hey, who have I got?
This is Kate.
Hey, Kate.
That bit had Eugene all over it.
Yeah, see, people are beginning to... Yeah, people are beginning to pick up when I'm lifting Eugene.
No, I mean, it's Eugene's footprint right in the middle of it. It's good that you, because a lot of people forget to go to his website. So, yeah, you're right. What's the last line in Tom's Still Life? I forget it.
Everything is part of it, and it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Yeah, there you go. I'd forgotten about that until you mentioned it. And everything is all, we're all a part of it. And you asked the question, do you get tired of hearing about West Virginia? And I thought, what a dumb question. We're all part of it. It's all connected. We're all one. It's all that one single blade of grass that's purple. I spent the last little bit of most of the day and half of last night thinking about the program, well, all evening long. All the programming, and I was mostly fixated on what David said about, I guess it was on John's show, on Fox Up, about lumping people all into one category and how dangerous that is, and I
concede that position. I concede that. I agree, and I may have been guilty.
I wanted to get this in because that show was so, yesterday's show was so long ago. I'm just about to become an abstract in my context. But the ranting, what right do we have? I mean, I'm just asking, what right do we have to rant about other cultures' practices? Is that like a form of imperialism that we're presuming that kind of paternalistic privilege? Even though we abhor, I mean, they're just, it's horrible. It's just horrible.
No, Kate, this is the kind of stuff I think about when the mic goes off and I sit around in the dark and the still of the night, because I have to step back and realize that I'm viewing all of this stuff as far as the world is concerned, a child of extreme privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I am a born and bred American. I am one of the most spoiled human beings on the planet.
And besides that, you're white male, I presume.
Well, you presume correctly. I'm pink male, but, you know, I get your point.
I said peach. I do, too. I think once something gets its hooks in my brain, and it starts going circular. And I get, yeah, but. And so then I start a debate with myself, or I start a debate with somebody who's close to me who I know is totally on the other side of the issue, you know, in my mind. And I just go around and around and around in circles. And I was raised up in higher education by people who said, where do you get your information? Who do you attribute that to? Where's the research? Yeah. So I just can't make broad general statements. But it also occurred to me, it's like, why is it so easy to focus on international atrocities when we ignore what's going on right in our own society?
Absolutely.
Like your last whole hour. And the Grant Hospital, I think it's the Grant Hospital in Atlanta, is getting ready to close. That's the only hospital in mid-city of Atlanta.
Grady.
And their hospitals are closing up. Our poor people are... So anyway, I want to get to the little dancing boys, but first I wanted to get back to the prejudices that the prejudice and bigotry when we attach a behavior to a whole society.
Yes, we are. I'm guilty. I know I am. I knew when the disgust was flowing out of my mouth, how bad it sounded and how guilty I was, and that's why I said, you know, this is strictly lizard brain thinking.
Yeah, well, yeah, I get that, and I do revenge really well too, and I and vitriol, and you know, I have to catch myself up and think.
But there are some people in this world that I would like for us not to have to have anything to do with.
Oh yeah. I understand.
You know, Washington wasn't that far afield when he said avoid foreign entanglements.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't imagine steamships. They couldn't imagine, you know, jet planes. They couldn't imagine the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
But they could imagine getting involved with countries that would take this noble experiment that they were setting up and just put it in the dust.
Well, yeah. And mixing it with religion.
I mean, for them, it was challenging enough just to have a meaningful, decent, non-firearm-involved relationship with the British and the French.
Mm-hmm. Not the Indians, though.
No. We were all for the we were all for the firearms with the Indians.
But so in kind of justifying my position, perpetuate. Aren't we perpetuating prejudice and bigotry when we attach the behavior? Like that we so abhor, and it's so horrible, and
and horrifying. It's just horrifying. But because I was thinking about what people said about the Saudi men, whatever, and I thought, yeah, but like I know the son of the architect who built a great many of the modern buildings in Baghdad, and his son, the architect's son, the second son, was an engineer who worked on those same buildings, and they were from Pakistan, and they, you know that they were whatever, I went to school in California with a young man from Tehran who was on one of the last planes out right before the overthrow in 79.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't anything like what we think. I don't know, when I hear people talk about Iranians and how whatever, I think, well, but that's not what he was like.
No.
God.
I
still know a lot of people from the Black Nation, from Nation of Islam. As a matter of fact, one of my very, very close coaches and mentors was the man who stepped up and took over Elijah Muhammad's mosque in Brooklyn. And he's wonderful. And I'm acquainted with a Black Panther and a few relocated Viet Cong. And so to attach, I mean, every one of those, the cultures that those people came from, we can say, oh, my God, he's a Paki. You know, or he's one of those Black Nation of Islam people, or he was a Viet Cong, whatever. Those individually, those people weren't like that, and I can't help but
no. It's the group. Himself. It's the group dynamic that brings it out in us.
Yeah,
it's not one. It's not one hairless ape dancing around the monolith with the bloody bone. It's several.
No. Yeah,
one won't do it.
But then it kind of circular argument. It all gets around to the rationalization is we were following orders or we're doing what our leader has told us to do or whatever, and that usually comes around to religion or monomaniacal power and prestige and
cult of personality. Sure.
Yeah, but it just disturbs me that I think that if I were in a conversation with somebody that these people would be discriminated against because of the society they were in.
Yeah, see, I don't want to discriminate against them. I don't want to do that in the least. I just want to not to have anything to do with them.
No.
But of course, we are oil junkies. Yeah. And as long as we remain addicted, we will not worry about the moral qualities of the guy from whom we get the fix.
No. No.
Does that make sense, Kate?
Yeah. So here we are back to power and property and prestige.
Yeah, I mean,
and
there are a lot of things that and that was something I tried to point out last night. We've lost the moral high ground to talk about things like this.
That's right. And back to the little dancing boys. Those we're comparing that culture to our Western norms, and if the men who were saying that they liked the way the little boy smelled and all that stuff, it would, you know, whatever. That's just arrested development. They're just children and adolescents themselves.
Well, I quoted I didn't quote, but I referred to Socrates and Plato and Dion a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a culture in which it was more than acceptable to take on and mentor a young man and have sex with him on the way toward teaching him how to be a good citizen, how to be a good member of the polis, how to be a proper member of the demos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we're comparing.
But you can't. You can't make that comparison. You can, however, wonder when it is that Rush Limbaugh will go over for a cultural liaison in northern Afghanistan.
Well, we don't know that he did, or that he's going to.
No, we just know that he went. We just know that he went to the Dominican Republic with a pocket full of Viagra.
Isn't that inflammatory speech, though?
No, it's factual speech.
Okay.
He got a prescription.
He or Trent Lott are going to go to to Afghanistan. Isn't that inflammatory? Isn't that making a presumption without fact?
No, that's making fun of pederastic Republicans in my book.
Okay, whatever.
But I recognize, Kate, that I'm rationalizing it.
No, well, that's your privilege. It's your radio station. But at least they're leaving the little girls alone. That's my point. That's where it came out with in my circle today, in my circular thinking. Is that, well, at least they're leaving the little girls alone, as opposed to what the Mormon Church is doing in Utah and Arizona.
Which is?
And by forcing 14-year-old girls to marry their cousins and all these uncles and all that crap. And we import young girls from Eastern Europe and Asia. We don't go, oh, my God, about that. We just kind of go, oh, my God.
Well, because, Kate, they're girls.
That's what I'm saying. And any time that there's a penis involved, we just get horrified and appalled and sickened and, oh, my God, and we start making jokes and we start laughing about it and just going on and on and on. God. But at least those little dancing boys weren't hungry. They're not. They didn't sound that the way the story read, they didn't appear to be cold or hungry or starving.
No, it's the little ugly boys who are cold and hungry and starving.
Well, I guess, you know, save one, save a dozen. You know, somebody's got to die. Can't save them all.
And at the end of the day, these are people we're doing business with. Now, whether I pass on it or decry it matters little, I suppose. But the fact of the matter is, you know, one of the people quoted in the story was an Uzbek warlord. We're in business with the Uzbeks.
Mm-hmm. We have been since before the trade towers went down, too.
Sure.
Because we have to get that gas line down through Afghanistan, and it has to come down through Uzbekistan.
And nobody will ask a question.
Nobody pays any attention to that. Nothing. All we worry about is who Oprah is, and who is not gonna, and who is, and Ron Paul is, and none of that makes a bit of difference. None of it, because nobody's paying attention to what's going on. And just as soon as these people started retiring from the Senate, and one other big old thing happened, I can't remember, they started dragging out the young white girl from whatever in the island, and they were arrested.
Natalie Holloway.
Thank you. I don't even know who that is. I mean,
how lucky you are, you don't know.
They drag that story out every time something big is going on behind the curtain. Every time. But you're right. We've lost the moral high ground. Look at our Indian reservations and our inner cities and what's going on down on the Gulf Coast. We don't have a bit of ground to stand on.
I do walk around, and I guess it probably means that I need, you know, in at least in modern America, I need to be profoundly medicated or something, because I walk around thinking about this stuff. I don't always come down on the right side of it, Kate. And sometimes my lizard brain takes complete charge, and I acknowledge it. But, you know, I can't pick up a damn banana in the grocery store without knowing that it is laden with cruelty. I cannot pick up a stalk of celery for a pot of potato soup without knowing that it comes with prepackaged cruelty. You cannot walk into St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City and buy a crucifix without knowing that it...
Yep.
Has not the blood of Christ, but the blood of a 12-year-old Chinese little girl on it.
I
guess, you know, there's a reason that, I'm sorry, I'm ranting, and I don't mean to rant on your minutes, Kate, but I want this to be a dialogue.
I'll send you a bill.
We live in a country that is so pervasively saturated with cruelty, misery, and misbegotten death, that there is not a blessed thing that we can lay our hand to, Kate, that does not have some level of horror attached to it.
And so when the women get punished in Islamic countries because, according to their religious customs, we go, oh, my God, they get beaten and raped and maimed. I mean, they get beaten and maimed and shamed. And you just did a whole litany of things. We're over here, we don't only get beaten, we suffer the indignities on us, put on us by the legal system and religion with chattel property, just by people, just by people who are presuming power and property and prestige.
You know, follow the
every single day. Every
yeah, follow the rabbit.
Day.
Follow the rabbit down the hole. The story of the woman with the teddy bear, and she's going to get beaten. Okay.
Well, no, that you don't know that.
Well, if she doesn't get beaten, it will be because the British government has you know, intervened on behalf of one of its subjects.
Maybe. But then she's, what right does this white woman have to go into a culture that she, I read a story on her today, she knew wit, she knows crap about that culture. Nothing. She just likes to travel around, and she just goes on these mad tours and teaches and does all this stuff. I've been in countries where I committed extreme faux pas because I didn't understand the culture. I even spoke the language, but I didn't understand the culture. And she, you know, she overstepped her bounds out of ignorance, sure. And she doesn't deserve to get hit 40 times with a, but I mean, there are some of us who've had our flesh flayed and got scars and, you know, I mean, goddamn, we live. And so I
understand all of that. And you know what? If you walk into another human being's house,
mm-hmm.
and you try to harm their family, and you get out with nothing but 40 lashes, you've gotten off light.
You're damn lucky.
Okay, in this particular instance, she inadvertently, through her own ignorance,
mm-hmm.
by permitting these children to name the bear,
mm-hmm.
insulted somebody's imaginary cloud critter.
Right, I understand all that.
Now, follow the rabbit a little further down the hole, though. What about the bear, Kate? Where'd the bear come from? I know where the bear. I'll bet you where the bear came from. It wasn't a Gund. It wasn't a Vermont teddy bear, handmade lovingly by teddy bear craftsman in Vermont. It was probably crafted by, again, the 12-year-old kid who, on her off duty from making crucifixes, makes bears while chained to a table.
Right, and so we just go on and on and on about how women are getting treated in other cultures when in fact. It's happening to us every day, from birth, every day, even though some of us don't walk around bleeding through our clothes. But it's just, and the white boys just keep paying us our 60 cents. And they don't even realize their dollar is only worth 10 cents.
Kate, do you have to be aware of it for it to have a karmic or a moral impact on your, you know, if we're going to use words, or for your soul, on your soul? Does the woman who or man who doesn't know diddly squat about what goes on in the Middle East and what it takes to pump oil all the way to the United States of America, does it have any bearing on them when they pull into the pump in their Cadillac Escalade, or is this something that only happens to the likes of you and me because we're paying attention?
I don't know. There's not even any right or wrong answer to that question. But what tickles me most is that sometimes there's nothing I can do about it. Sometimes there's no right or wrong answer. All I can do is come up with more questions. All I can do is argue the point and say, yeah, but what about this and what about that? And you try to explain people's ignorance or blindness or the not understanding, not paying attention, whatever. Look what that's gotten us. Look at the kind of government we've gotten. Look at what's happening with the climate. The situation, the global situation that we're in politically, geophysically, what tickles me the most is that the people who are walking around blind don't have any understanding that chaotic systems are always self-regulating. That's the law of the universe. And I'm just gleefully rubbing my hands saying, yeehaw! It's all coming down. It's sliding sideways, and the farther down it goes, the faster it goes, just like an avalanche.
Well, it's the nature of momentum.
Mm-hmm. And the faster it goes, the farther it goes, the faster it goes, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Bodies at rest tend to remain at rest. Bodies in motion tend to remain in motion.
Mm-hmm.
when
people driving their SUVs up to the pump, I just smile and say, well, well, well. That's what my grandma would say. Well, well, well. Mm-mm-mm.
How about that?
Well, off Swan.
I haven't heard that one in a while, I got to tell you.
It's the top of the hour. I guess I reckon we're out of here, huh?
Yeah, well, we could be. You know, the one nice counterpoint to all of my hatefulness last night was hearing Bishop Spong on Peter's program.
He's too wonderful, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And
send that archive out to a whole bunch of people.
I could easily be convinced that, well, I mean, I am convinced he's got the right idea. And the saddest thing for me is that his group isn't missionizing. His group isn't proselytizing because they've come to the conclusion that proselytizing is a little bit nasty.
Yeah, you don't have to. You just have to walk around being. And somehow that energy exchange with another person or another system or another tree or another cloud, whatever, just the energy exchange just causes a slight shift. Doesn't matter how big, just ever so slight, and we don't even have to know that the shift happened. Just have to walk around projecting that kind of thing. David touched on that last night about the energy that we, you know, that we give an issue or an idea. Just have to, you know, I don't want to get any more.
Yeah, what is that? What did Beatles say? And in the end, the love you give is equal to the love you take, or the love you take is equal to the love you make, or there was some sort of mathematical love equation in there, and you know, it does make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the only thing I know how to do.
And all we can do is continue to do it in the face of people who flay the hides off of women for getting raped,
mm-hmm.
or people who name teddy bears, or people who wage wars in the name of God, Allah, Jesus, Vishnu.
All comes around to power and property and prestige. That's it.
Gronk, me have big cave, me kill you.
And presuming male privilege and power. And I just, chaotic systems always self-regulate.
That is such a fancy way of saying, you're going to get yours, buddy.
I don't know that they will. The guy on the bench in West Virginia, I don't know that he's going to get his. He might die a happy man. Who knows? That's none of my business. But I don't know. But my lizard brain doesn't even want to go there because we're way past the top of the hour now. So, y'all take care and, say hey to the family for me. And oh, listen, people, somebody took the graph down on the web page and we don't know where we're at we don't know where we're at in the the money, the fundraising, and I doubt that we're even close. And people, it's getting toward the end of the month, and whatever you've got left over in your chat, in your bank account, could you just put a little bit of it back in the mailbox to send it to Eisenhower Street, Eisenhower, whatever, in Beckley, the postal address, the snail mail address is on there, and or you could sign up for PayPal or something. But we got to put this over the top because this is the third month in a row that Head On is running in the red, and we're getting damn close. And the people who have the internet connection are not going to be pleased when there's no money. So we got to keep it lit, as Mikey would say. That's my little rant for tonight. All right, I appreciate the dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for kind of calling me on the carpet. I appreciate that.
I didn't.
But I
didn't. I just said my mind goes in circles and it goes around and around and around and around. And these are just where places that just stopped. And I said, oh, okay. Well, what if? Well, how come? That isn't about. It ain't even about you, Bob Kincaid.
Everything is about me, Kate.
You're a maniac.
The world revolves around me. It is a Bob-centered universe, and you know it.
I got news for you, cowboy. Later, baby.
Oh, somebody's going to put some worms in my cereal for that one.
Oh, I hope so.
That self-correcting universe, and I just thumbed my nose at it.
Chaos is self-regulating. Yeah, chaotic systems self-regulate.
No, because I knew when it was coming out of my mouth that I was ashamed of myself. So even if you didn't feel like you were, I appreciate the fact that you did.
I don't know how to respond to that. Nothing about was about you. If there's a program note here or a listener, an audience participation person, because I'm really tired about hearing about penises. Could we talk about something else tomorrow and the next day and the next day? Oh, such a boring subject. Oh well.
and I ain't touching it.
I didn't. I'm not. It ain't even about you. I'm just out of here. I'm sending my money. I may have another $10 left in my account. I'll just maybe just send it to you. So there.
Take there. That, Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, ciao for now.
Bye. Bye now. See you, Kate. All right, we are at the top of the hour, and we'll take a quick break for the news and come back to your phone calls. If you're on hold, please stay that way. We'll find out who you are. You know what that means. I'll find out who you are during the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn.
Here
I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.
This is the Quality News Network. Israeli and Palestinian leaders agree to immediately restart long-stalled peace talks early next month, making an independent Palestinian state a possibility. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Annapolis, Maryland, President Bush read a joint statement drafted by Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who say discussions could begin in December, with full agreement reached by late next year. In Hebron, West Bank, a protest against the peace talks brought clashes between those loyal to Palestinian leader Abbas and Islamists who call him a traitor. One demonstrator was shot and killed during those skirmishes. In the past 48 hours, Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 7 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Israelis say the men all belong to Hamas. Iran's defense minister says his country has developed a new missile capable of reaching Israel and U.S. military bases in the Middle East. The 1,200-mile missile has not yet been tested. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said farewell to his troops today. He is expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. Then on Thursday, Musharraf will be sworn in as a civilian Pakistani president. 6 unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. forces north of Baghdad in the past 48 hours. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a Baghdad checkpoint, killing 9 Iraqi policemen. The defense ministers of South and North Korea held a landmark meeting today to discuss resolution of a long-standing border dispute in the West Sea. China is warning the U.S. not to support Taiwan's bid to be seated in the U.N. Beijing also has demanded the U.S. stop selling weaponry to the island republic Communist China claims as its own. In Chicago, multimillionaire Steve Fawcett's wife has asked the court to declare her husband dead so that his estate can be settled. The 63-year-old adventurer disappeared in September on a solo plane flight above the Nevada desert. In Sacramento, state and federal officials are investigating a dredging project by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation that has killed thousands of game fish. Bureau drained water around a protected island, apparently without knowing the number of fish in the area. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll be right back.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Freddie Mac will sell $6 billion worth of company shares to cover more bad debt losses. Last week, company officials set aside $2.5 billion for the 3 months from July to September. Exposure to bad mortgage debt is centered on the subprime factor, which is producing record loan defaults. Five countries that make up the East African Community have agreed to a plan that would open their markets to the European Union. Controversial trade obligations are due to expire next month, ruled illegal by the World Trade Organization. Financial aid to help third world nations adapt to more floods, droughts, and other changes due to global warming will cost the richest nations an estimated $86 billion a year by 2015. According to a panel of experts commissioned by the United Nations, half the cost, or around $44 billion, will go to improvements on infrastructure for those countries. Financial management software maker Intuit will acquire Homestead Technologies for $170 million. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $94.42 a barrel, gold at $814 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow closed up 215 points to end at 12,958, NASDAQ up 40 points, S&P 500 up 21. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. Well, we've got about 40 minutes or so of great conversation remaining in tonight's program, which will, of course, be followed by more great conversation on the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, which comes your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, immediately following this one. After that, of course, you know, the horn section comes along. And it looks like this may very well be Mark Levine's maiden voyage with the horn section this evening. We'll try to make it as painless as possible for him, John Fox and Peter Godbold and I. And then, as usual, we will turn conversation radio into conservation radio at midnight Eastern Time with All Foxed Up. Right now, however, we've got someone on the phone. We've got a good friend from days gone by, Mike Fox, who is an activist in the Florida area. He's involved with what's being called a unity rally tomorrow evening in the St. Petersburg area in conjunction with the CNN YouTube debate that's coming up, which I think we can all agree is probably the big fraud. Mike, are you there?
Most assuredly, Mr. K.
I tell you what, I'm glad to have you on to talk about this for just a little bit, because I've watched this Republican YouTube debate thing coming up, and well, with all debates in general, okay, let's just put it this way. With all debates in general, I've come to the idea that they are, for the most part, a big old rotten wrestling match.
There you go.
And it sounds to me you're working from that paradigm tomorrow in St. Petersburg, correct?
Indeed we are, sir. If I may, give just the Reader's Digest overview here so that everybody knows specifically what the theme is, et cetera, and so forth. It's called the Rise Up, the System is Broken Unity Rally. And you just absolutely nailed it when you said that these debates tend to be a bit of a sham. The theme here is this, that this millionaire's beauty pageant of a process that we're being fed as a political process is just flat out broken, and the key to getting our country back is grassroots organization, is neighbors talking to neighbors, is folks listening to talk radio like this and chiming in. Most assuredly, it isn't from multi-million dollar paid anchors asking other millionaires, if you focus on the top tier candidates of both parties, let me underline. And so what we're talking about here is we aren't endorsing any given candidate with this action. As a matter of fact, what's really exciting about this is that we have arguably the most broadly based coalition I've ever seen. We have, let me ask you this. I know you're a veteran of these kinds of activities, that sort of thing. Have you ever seen a situation where you had official Democratic Party entities, the DECs, Democratic Executive Committees, as well as Progressive Democrats of America, the Florida chapter, as well as Republicans via the Ron Paul meetup groups, as well as Libertarians, the Libertarian Party of Pinellas County, as well as the Florida State Green Party on board, as well as the socialist candidate for president, Brian Moore, all in the same space, all saying the same thing.
I can't imagine that happening without spontaneous combustion taking place, Mike.
And that's right. I'm telling you, brother, we've got something really, really fabulous going on down here in the St. Pete area. And I hope that all the Florida listeners, I realize this is late in the day, most assuredly, but if you're within a couple of hours drive, we definitely want to welcome you. The entire day's festivities begin at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We have Pioneer Park, which is in downtown St. Petersburg, two blocks away from the Mahaffey. And I have an interesting story about what they're doing as far as barricading is concerned in that space. But let me finish the general overview here.
How did I know there were going to be barricades, of course? Yeah, go ahead.
Isn't that something, brother? But in any event, we're talking 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the festivities begin. We're talking all kinds of tabling, outreach to all kinds of different organizations. Not only do we have political parties on board, but we're also talking to good grassroots activism groups like we have the chapters of Code Pink, we have Veterans for Peace, we have Tampa Bay Democracy for America, we've got the Florida Peace Action Network, we've got, I've already mentioned Vets for Peace, the Rainbow Push Coalition, as well as Floridians for Healthcare Now, as well as Now here in Pinellas County. So this is a beautiful opportunity for folks to network with, you name the organization. While personally, I'll admit right here that I'm a dyed-in-the-wool liberal here. I'll be more than happy to defend that. We're standing side by side with Libertarians and Republicans as well, who will likewise have the opportunity to network there, because one of the concerns that all of the organizers have here is that this whole are you an R or are you a D or are you an L, you know, that just gets in the way of us saving our country. The neocons have been successful at driving these wedges between us on these just totally bogus issues like gay marriage and whether or not you're pro-life, non-life, anti-life, whatever.
How soupy is Terry Schiavo's brain? Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much. All those ridiculous, in the greater scheme of things, who cares kinds of issues, when in the meantime, quietly, they're removing the fundamental pillars of what made this country great. One of the things I love to mention to folks is, you realize that Hitler's Germany still had habeas corpus. We don't.
Jesus.
We have found the magic formula here, I think, Mr. K, and that is, if we focus on constitutional issues, checks and balances, no, we don't have a king, things of that nature, then suddenly everybody starts listening. And then when we say, look, it's not going to be television that's going to save this process for us. It's not going to be high-paid consultants that are going to do this. It's going to be you and me talking to our next-door neighbors, getting them to give a damn. And that's what we're going to be doing between 2 and 5 o'clock. Then we'll have a press conference at 5, and I anticipate quite a bit of participation. And then a photo op from 5:30 until 6. 6 o'clock, we hit the streets, and we will be marching in the streets around the Mahaffey. Here's the interesting segue for, as you had mentioned, imagine that there's a police presence. Right now, even 2 days before we did this, they put up barricades from 1st Avenue South in St. Petersburg to 5th Avenue South in St. Petersburg, which surrounds the Mahaffey Theater, which is where this is taking place. As well as from the water, this is right on the Gulf there, or not the Gulf, excuse me, but on Tampa Bay, excuse me, wrong side, on Tampa Bay, and First Street. So literally, they have barricaded this entire area, and we're talking not just streets.
I thought it was a debate, Mike, not a siege.
Yeah, can you imagine this? And, I mean, I've never seen a situation, quite frankly, now, oh, okay, I that's hyperbole. Well, we've had circumstances where, like, we have this large road rally down here where, okay, they'll block off a portion of the city. But My argument is this one. The Mahaffey only holds 2,300 people, okay? So we're saying we have to totally shut down, literally, what is that? 5 blocks by 2 blocks, 10 blocks of a major city, but yet when we've over 2,300 people to keep security together, but if we have 35,000-40,000 of them showing up in the same city to a ball game, you don't see this happening.
No, you don't.
Yeah, we seem.
I mean, I'm a diehard West Virginia Mountaineer fan, Mike, and I know for a fact that in excess of 65,000 people went to the stadium there where Tampa Bay plays to watch the USF play the Mountaineers. I know that for a fact, and I didn't hear anything about the city getting locked down.
There you go. So, but the beauty of this, okay. First and foremost, I wanted to get everybody just a little bit heated up about that. Now, here's the good news. Here's how beautiful this is going to be. It just so happens that that barricade that I'm talking about on First Avenue South is the southern border of the park that we're going to be at. So, I mean, we are right next door in a permitted park, totally legal. We even have put up $1 million liability policy for the city in order to get that park. There isn't going to be any trouble. You and I both know there's
no.
Going to be any trouble. And peaceful people here, for heaven's sake. But we jumped through the hoops, we played the game, and we said, okay, fine, we'll put up $1 million liability policy. But the beauty of this thing, you've got all these folks who are playing by the rules, totally, we all are, and you're going to have photographs of, I've been told that First Avenue section is where the police cars are going to be parked for the God only knows how many dozens of foot cops that we're going to have. And so you're going to have photo opportunities where right next to a bunch of peace-loving, totally law-abiding citizens are going to be right next to this line of like 70 cop cars. I already have the perfect photo op together. We had this beautiful woman here in St. Petersburg by the name of Rosemary. And Rosemary's a World War II vet. And Rosemary is a member of Veterans for Peace. And Rosemary, unfortunately, God love her, has leukemia as we speak.
Oh, geez.
And she has fought for our side her entire life. Was down fighting against the Sandinistas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so she will be standing in a Veterans for Peace shirt in front of 60 cop cars that are obviously afraid of her. It'll be absolutely beautiful. And then now as far as the march is concerned, we will peacefully go wherever it is we can go. We will be networking with everyone that we come in contact with, trying to just get them on board, not with any specific political agenda. Because an awful
Well, that's what that's the thing that's striking me about this, Mike, and that's why I was glad to have you chime into the program. Is this idea, first of all, you know, going back, there's a wrestling match going to take place inside the theater. That's clear. I think it's kind of a shame that Google and YouTube have signed on with CNN to participate in this fraud. And it would be a fraud. It's a fraud when it's Democrats, and it's a fraud when it's Republicans, okay? I did debate in high school. I know what debate looks, sounds, feels, and tastes like, okay? This ain't debate. And with that in mind, it sounds to me like what you're doing is you are attempting to energize people, extraordinary Americans, not these goobers inside the theater. You're trying to empower extraordinary Americans to recognize what it feels like to be one. Is that fair?
Oh, that's more than fair. That's beautiful. I love that. Because something that I've been using as my mantra through this process, and arguably I should have the quote totally down if I'm going to use it as my mantra, but I paraphrase it. Teddy Roosevelt once said, and please, if anyone could call in and tell me exactly what the quote was, beautiful. Teddy Roosevelt once said, you do not damn your opponent. You damn that pitiful soul who doesn't get into the fray. And that is the key over the last, I'm not sure how old you are, Bob. I'm 47 years old.
Yeah, I'm 44, so.
There we go. We're of the same generation. I don't know about you, but my entire adult life, I have watched everyday human beings drop out of the system, no longer participate. It's either not cool to do, or they're just too busy, or whatever the case may be. They have allowed the wealthy elite those who aren't looking out in our best interest to take this process over. And that's what we're calling for. At this point, we're just saying, look, wake up, get involved with somebody. I would love, as Florida co-coordinator of Progressive Democrats of America, I would love if they got involved with that organization. But if it turns out they get involved with Ron Paul instead, fine, so be it. Please do. Just talk to your neighbors and discuss this. This has to become polite dinner conversation. You know, the fact that our country is being taken from us. The analogy that I always use is, when I was 3 years old, I won't stretch it out too far. When I was 3 years old, my father was just a laborer. He was a laborer in a paper factory. He wasn't even a tradesman by any stretch of the imagination. He owned his home. He was paid a wage that would enable him to own his home. He drove not a new car, but a car. My mother didn't have to work. My mother didn't have to scrimp down and worry about coupons and all that sort of thing. And I had health care. That same guy is making $7.50 an hour today. It physically cannot be done anymore. And it's simply because we forgot the fact that the only reason that my dad had that opportunity, being just a regular guy born in the country, or out in the country, the only reason why we had that opportunity was because union members were willing to get hit in the head with brick bats in the early 20th century.
And
over our lifetimes, we've lost that somewhere along the way. I'm not saying we're going to go out and we're going to start any civil disobedience.
No. But just to remember it, Mike. I mean, you just described an upbringing of similar circumstance to both mine and thousands of people in this audience. We come from that, and we don't know where in the hell we lost it. Just to give you a little bit of background. We've got a nursing strike going on up here in West Virginia right now, where it's not about nurses demanding higher pay. It's about nurses asking not to be worked 16-hour shifts.
Yep.
And as a consequence of that, it astonishes me. America was built on the sort of situation that you just described. The guy doing the job that your dad did can't own a home right now, and frankly, he's probably one blown spark plug away from losing his job if he can't get into the factory.
Amen. And then he's going to be on the street.
Yep. And so is the family.
So that is, and I'm so glad that we're on the same page. I knew we'd be on the same page here. But in any event, that is what we're fighting for here. And the folks who are coming together, it's just an amazing coalition. And I would certainly ask, if I may be so bold as to give an email address.
Oh, here. Do please.
Thank you so much. Excuse me. Anyone who wants additional information, please email me at St. Pete Debate. That's S. as in Sam, T as in Thomas, St. Pete, P-E-T-E, Debate, D-E-B-A-T-E, at yahoo.com. And I will be more than happy to provide information, hopefully we'll be able to. If you can't make it to this particular rally, we can certainly provide networking opportunities to a plethora of different groups that will be right up your alley.
Mike, you know what I find fascinating out of this is, I consider that I have very little in common with the Ron Paul people, to be quite honest. If you can successfully have a meeting of the minds on issues that you can find common ground on, you are demonstrating a little bit of hope for the polity of the United States. And if it can happen there, it's sort of like the line from New York, New York. If it can happen here, it can happen anywhere.
Well, so the thing that gives me hope in this whole process, Bob, is we have identified a few core issues. Now, while I say the theme of the event is just simply, hey, get active. In our work here in St. Petersburg, we have identified a few core issues that everyone tends to agree on. And I would argue that will be our saving grace.
That's things like fundamental constitutional rights.
Bingo.
Not torturing people.
Bingo.
Not spying on the American people just because you can or because you can't and you just lie about it. What else? Decent.
King.
Yeah, we don't have a king. Decent wages for a decent day's work.
Yep.
Healthcare?
That is, it's a wedge, there's a wedge issue right there, unfortunately. Because it comes down to, like you had mentioned, you're not necessarily a Ron Paul supporter. It's amazing that, we in the liberal community here in St. Pete have been able to build bridges, but when it comes to things like social programs in general, I mean, I'm sorry, if anybody out there is a Ron Paul supporter, I want you to recognize this man is a libertarian. He is. And if you can live with the fact that his answer to everything is the market will take care of it, that is where there's a huge wedge in the liberal community and the libertarian slash Ron Paul community. The libertarian's answer to everything is the market will take care of it. We don't want any government. The liberals' approach is, look, we had libertarian times. It was called the Great West, the Wild West. And how were things ran? The guy with the most money bought guys with guns, and they could rape your daughter with impunity. And then civilization came along in the visage of a government that everybody can vote on, and we can all work this thing out. And that's where liberals, that's their answer. So there are, healthcare is a contentious issue, unfortunately. Another huge contentious issue is the border. Liberals tend to be much more welcoming and likewise much more focusing on the cause of the movement across the border as opposed to simply the fact, hey, these folks are taking our jobs and undercutting us. And as a liberal, I recognize that as well.
Well, I recognize it too, and I also know why it's happening, Mike.
Bingo!
It's happening because we don't put corporatist contractors in prison for hiring.
There you go.
We don't put them in prison for, letting them get injured on the job and then not paying workers' comp because they were, off the books in the first place.
Yep. And it is mind-boggling to me that you see the neocons will play this whole security card while at the same time they live for a porous border. They live for undocumented workers that they can toss union members out in the street over.
Sure.
And to all my libertarian friends, I always want to suggest to them, look, unfettered capitalism is survival of the fittest by definition. And it is a system that will drive wages down all on its own. Again, we had unfettered
capitalism. And unfettered capitalism is also not contained inside Adam Smith.
Thank you. Amen. And we had unfettered capitalism. Think of Alabama in 1851.
Yeah, I know.
That was unfettered capitalism. Okay? And we will all be slaves. bottom line. But anyway, we're preaching to the choir here. And I'm sure you have other callers, and quite frankly, I have an organizational conference call with all of the...
Go get them, Mike. I tell you what, you're fired up, and I love it, and, if I wasn't up here in the hills of West Virginia, by golly, I'd be in St. Pete tomorrow.
Hot dog. I appreciate it, brother. And hopefully our paths will cross at some point when I'm heading up in your general neck of the woods as well.
You scream. I answer.
Outstanding, my brother. And may I give that email address one last time?
St. Pete, STPET, debate?
Debate?
At yahoo.com.
That it is all day long, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot. And follow up with us, will you? I mean, if you've got photos or video or you just want to call in and give a telephone update, I'd love to hear about how it goes down.
Rocking and rolling. Thank you, sir.
All right. See you, Mike.
You bet.
Bye now. Our buddy Mike Fox from Progressive Democrats of America, Florida chapter, also associated from time to time with the wonderful Sam Simpson, who has run for Congress and I think will run again. I love that man's energy. And of course, there's so much. Before we can solve any problems, we have to identify them. And once we identify them, we have to prioritize them. And once they've been prioritized, we have to figure out, look, it's triage, okay? America is in a place where we have to do triage. Now, one of the things I think, one of the common things probably at that meetup get-together tomorrow in the park in St. Petersburg is going to be that the triage system comes up with a determination that nothing can go forward until the war ends. I'm guessing, but I think that's a pretty solid guess. Health care? Children's health care? Funding for education? Funding for infrastructure? A return of the Constitution? A restoration? You realize that we are involved, don't you, in a restoration movement in this country. This isn't an anti-Bush movement anymore. This isn't an anti-Republican movement anymore. This is a constitutional restoration movement. Because constitutional rights are largely gone. Now, bear in mind, at some point, as our good friend Mark Levine noted in his program, the Supreme Court may very well declare that owning a handgun is an individual right under the Constitution. Never done that before. On the other hand, however, it'll be a cold day in hell when the Supreme Court recognizes that within the rights that are enumerated in the Bill of Rights, a right to appropriate and decent health care, that ain't coming. That only happens for members of Congress, members of the Senate, the diplomatic corps, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. Those are the only people in America who are absolutely guaranteed health care as a basic human right. And you better bet, if the point was pressed, the Supreme Court would find that it is a basic human right as long as it's for our betters. This is a constitutional restoration movement. Now, what sort of presupposes a constitutional restoration movement is the fact that a coup has taken place in this country, and it has. Look at what I talked about with the judicial system in West Virginia. Guess what? It's not just West Virginia. You can find corrupted, cronyized court systems in all 50 states and all over the federal bench. One repugnant man by the name of David Sentell, sitting on the United States Circuit Court of Appeals, has been almost single-handedly responsible for the overturning of our constitutional rights. Whether it was through his rubber stamping of the assault on the presidency of Bill Clinton, or the crap that he has done in service to his master George Bush. But there are more, and there are others. When your Constitution has been assaulted, it becomes necessary to restore that Constitution. And we are engaged, those of us who are paying attention, not in a political process, not in a political wrestling match of us against them, but in something that is nothing short of a constitutional restoration movement, a restoration of the Republic and the principles upon which it was founded. I'll be honest with you, these movements, they bat about 500. They had a republic restoration movement in ancient Rome. It failed. Other restoration movements have failed. Some have succeeded. They managed to restore a constitutional monarchy in Great Britain, and somebody else can do the history on that because it's not my long suit. But while you and I worry about the outright destruction of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, others are utterly obsessed with making a mockery of it. There are constitutional amendments proposed in several states. States that aren't worried about habeas corpus. States that aren't worried about domestic spying and illegal wiretapping. States where a certain cadre of citizens who care little for their citizenship don't care even more. Wow, does that make any sense? Don't care for how government runs roughshod over their well-being. For instance, the state of Colorado, where they have something known as the Definition of a Person Amendment. Or in Mississippi, where they call it the Ultimate Human Life Amendment. Or Georgia, where they call it the Paramount Right to Life Amendment. Or Michigan, where it's called the Personhood Amendment. All of these particular movements have different names, but they all do the same thing. Each one of these measures would change the respective state constitutions from Mississippi to Georgia to Michigan to Colorado to define, and get your head around this, please. I was asked to stop talking about penises. Here, let's talk about the opposite end of the spectrum. Let's talk about a fertilized egg inside the uterus of a living, breathing woman who happens to be an American citizen and a citizen of one of those four states. The measures I've just mentioned would modify the state constitution in any one of those four states to define a fertilized egg. You know, I'm reading the words before I say them, and it just makes me want to go, yeah, gone, right down the rabbit hole. A fertilized egg as a person entitled to full constitutional protections, including inalienable rights, substantive due process, procedural due process, and full access to the judicial system. An egg. One sperm and one ovum, with every bit as much constitutional right as the ExxonMobil Corporation. I would have said, with every bit as much constitutional right as you or me, but you or me, we're losing our constitutional rights, as we've sort of delineated over the time. But that fertilized egg would have every bit as much constitutional right as the ExxonMobil Corporation, or Halliburton, or Blackwater. This is something called the no-compromise anti-abortion movement. Because these constitutional amendments would absolutely trump a woman's right to determine the course that her own biology in her own body takes. Tony Panetta is deputy director of the National Abortion Rights Action League Pro-Choice Colorado. She says the Definition of a Person Amendment in Colorado is, quote, the latest volley in the death by a thousand paper cuts by anti-choice activists. But wait, what have I told you on a number of times? I know we throw around the names of legal cases from time to time, and it gets kind of, you know, sort of murky. There's a case out there called Griswold versus Connecticut. And it is the legal foundation upon which Roe versus Wade rests. And Griswold versus Connecticut was not an abortion case. It was a case about access to birth control. And I have said time and time again that it is the ultimate goal of these anti-female, anti-uterus, anti-choice, anti-constitutional rights advocates who hide under the rubric of being
pro-life, part of the culture of life. You know, the idiots that danced and sang outside the hospice where Terry Schiavo lay dying. I have told you for long and long that their goal is not Roe versus Wade. Their goal is Griswold versus Connecticut. And these movements in places as far disparate as Michigan and Georgia and Mississippi and Colorado are full frontal assaults on Griswold versus Connecticut on one of those state-by-state, states' rights basises of which the right and the libertarians and the Ron Paul people are so dearly fond. Because you see, the Colorado Amendment or the Georgia or the Mississippi or the Michigan Amendment would outlaw not just abortion, but birth control. Pills, foams, sponges, condoms, IUDs, all of them, as illegal as a bottle of bootleg hooch in Prohibition. The great grandchildren of the Carrie Nation types of Prohibition are now hard at work on enacting a prohibition on women's bodies. The group behind the initiative in Colorado is a 20-year-old freakette named Christy Burton. This is how they twist and sicken the language. She's the head of Colorado for Equal Rights. And she said, "The goal is simply to define when life begins. And we'll see where that takes us." I know where it takes us. I know where it takes women. I know where it will take people like my precious daughters. It will take them to a place that looks and sounds and feels a lot like hell. A place where a husband or a boyfriend can dictate the workings of their own bodies. A place where love may not be sampled without the horrifying fear of creating a child for the Reich. A place where their worth will be measured only by their ability to give birth via their reproductive organs, not by their ability to give birth to thoughts or ideas or concepts. Only their ability to give birth to a baby. Where the idea of their education will become superfluous at best. Because a woman who is fit only for breeding doesn't need just a whole lot of what we call here in the hills book learning. Lord. And just as the Supreme Court here in West Virginia gave a pass to a criminal enterprise like Massey, so too the wholly corrupt Supreme Court in Colorado gave the imprimatur of its approval for a ballot initiative that would reduce women in that state to nothing more than baby machines. How long ago was it that we played the audio from the video that was shot by our good friends Max Blumenthal and Thomas Shoemaker of Mike Huckabee saying that if only abortion had been illegal, we would have millions and millions of Americans to go out and pick lettuce instead of having the Mexicans do it. Do yourself a favor. I'm not getting anything out of this. Go to your library or maybe Amazon or better yet, Powell's Books. Find yourself a copy of The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. Read it. Take it to heart. Because, you see, the other side already has, and they like the world that is depicted in The Handmaid's Tale. Never mind, and I don't mean to be unsympathetic, never mind that pathetic woman who's going to have the life beaten out of her in Saudi Arabia, or the woman in Sudan. We're on the fast track to doing it here. And it starts with telling a woman that she has no right to control when she conceives, that she is an instrument of the Lord's will. And she will conceive when the man to whom she is attached decides that she will conceive. And if she dies in childbirth, again, it's God's will. This isn't some nightmare scenario from a science fiction novel. This is your reality. This is the reality that it's being handed to you. Handed to us. And more importantly, our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren. Because when snakes like this get out of the box, they're awfully hard to put back in. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you joining in, whether you were calling or whether you were in the chat room or emailing, whether you'll listen to this program now or at some point in the future. I always cherish your thoughts, and knowing that you have chosen to spend a little bit of the finite time you have in this world with us. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, and to Peter Godbold, our IT consultant. On the way next with Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio. Thanks to Ben Birch, the healing, hardest working man in liberal talk. If you value what we do here on the Horn, you value Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. There's been an historic breakthrough in diplomatic efforts between Israeli and Palestinian leaders with the help of the White House. Israeli and Palestinian leaders agreeing to revive long-stalled peace talks starting early next month, making an independent Palestinian state a possibility. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Annapolis, Maryland, President Bush read a joint statement drafted by Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who say discussions could begin next month with full agreement reached by late next year. In Hebron, West Bank, a protest against the peace talks brought clashes between those loyal to Palestinian leader Abbas and Islamists who called him a traitor. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said goodbye to his troops today. He's expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. He'll be sworn in as civilian president then on Thursday. Six unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. forces north of Baghdad in the past 48 hours. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a Baghdad checkpoint, killing nine Iraqi policemen. The defense ministers of South and North Korea held a landmark meeting today to discuss resolution of a longstanding border dispute in the West Sea. NFL star safety Sean Taylor died of a gunshot wound today after being shot by an intruder at his home near Miami, Florida. The 24-year-old played for the Washington Redskins. He was their first pick in the 2004 NFL Draft. Texas oil man Oscar Wyatt was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in prison for conspiracy in the United Nations oil for food scandal. The 83-year-old self-made oil tycoon is one of seven individuals convicted.